Hi and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul here again with...
Chris.
Dan.
Lee.
Well, we've had the Austrian Grand Prix. Anyone stay awake through it?
I stayed awake up until about two-thirds of the way through the race, and then after that...
Five-place podcast penalty. Let's start again.
Did I speak too quickly?
Yes.
In a certain area?
Yep, you went over the line.
Oh, good Lord.
Should I start from the kitchen?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, due to infractions made by other podcast members, Lee is starting the podcast in the kitchen, which is approximately a million miles away from where everybody else is starting.
It's because I had to change my socks.
Because you had to change your socks.
Yeah, I had to go for a complete sock change.
25 place penalty instantly.
But not
what we're trying to say is penalties were, this weekend, ridiculous.
Utterly. 25 places for both McLarens, five and 10 places for the Red Bulls, drive-throughs as well, because they couldn't get all the grid places in without having to start at the Nürburgring.
Does Alonso have to do his drive-through, even though he kind of got taken out of the race?
Alonso's been driven through.
Yeah, I mean, the penalties were a bit ridiculous, but it did lead to...
An entertaining first lap. Did that have anything to do with the penalties?
A little bit, because... No, it didn't really, did it? McLaren were always going to be back there.
Well, I don't know, Alonso managed to get ahead of the Manners, and then that's how he hit Kimi.
Yeah, that's quite right, yeah. He may have hit Kimi a bit early. Well, he didn't actually hit Kimi, Kimi hit him.
Kimi hit him, Kimi collected him.
Yeah, it sounded at first as though Alonso may have caused Raikkonen to lose control. The impact of been reading in various news sources was so severe that they cannot recover any footage from Fernando Alonso's car, and the telemetry on Kimi Raikkonen's car pointed to no collision with Fernando Alonso until after Raikkonen had lost control.
Well, it won't be the first time that Raikkonen spun his rear wheels when he's using the starting map, will it?
No, you've got a bit of a theory about that. Who doesn't like it?
Yes, my theory is that he spins his wheels when he's using the starting map.
It has happened before, yeah. And
well, it happened in Canada.
It did.
Coming off the hairpin for the last 2 years.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that was the first lap out after a pit stop when he's using the start map again. So why aren't Ferrari listening to him and
just dialing it back a bit?
Then again, it's Kimi, isn't it? It's all or nothing. Or nothing.
He's a very sensitive driver, isn't he? It's that things seem to get him and take performance like really quickly if there's something he's not happy with.
Yeah, you get the feeling that Vettel kind of makes do with the car that he's given and manages to get the best out of it anyway. Whereas Raikkonen has to have everything completely in place for it to even for him to be anywhere near competitive.
Mm-hmm. Bit like Jenson Button in that way.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. If something's not right for Jenson Button,
I'd argue that. Kimi might be a bit more sensitive even than Jensen.
Quite possibly, but it was unfortunate to see two world champions taken out in the second corner of the race. We always knew that McLaren were going to be slow, but we didn't realise they would be up this much up in the air.
More world champions on the back row than there was in the front.
Yeah, there was, two world champions on the back row, quite correct. Yeah.
I mean, aside from that, Rosberg had an absolutely fantastic race.
He did. No, can't take it away from the main point of the race. Nico Rosberg winning, cutting Lewis's gap to 10 points. I was a huge, lambaster, if you want to say that, of Nico Rosberg earlier on in the season.
I'm glad you got that word right. I didn't want to use Jacques again this
year. No Jacques. Please, no Jacques attack. And... I wanted Nico to provide a title fight. I wanted him to do something because it looked like Lewis had picked up 2015 where he left off 2014. And Nico has fought back. And it's good. We've actually got something of a title fight now.
Game on, Lewis.
Yeah, game on.
But we've not seen any racing between the two of them.
No, Lewis did kind of...
We've seen either Nico running away with it or Lewis running away with it.
Yeah.
Or... Lewis running away with it and then stopping in the pits for no apparent reason.
It was good to see Nico being a bit assertive, from the start this weekend. You know, he's been a bit wishy-washy and just a bit, rubbish off the starts. But it was nice to see him actually taking it to Lewis.
Yeah,
and he's defending really, really hard. You know, for the it's the beginning there.
I think Lewis has actually already come out with the excuses saying, "Oh, I had clutch problems at the start, and that's why I didn't get away as quick."
Yeah, he's been saying that since Bahrain, that they changed clutches and he went back to the old clutch and it was better for him. But then he has to progress with the new clutch because it doesn't work as well with the systems that Mercedes have implemented. So,
but even so, there were 70 laps between the start.
Oh yeah, yeah. One of those laps, of course, he incurred a penalty of his own by going over the white line on the exit of the pit lane, which that was race over at that point. Really, yeah, he was never going to catch Nico and pull out a 5 second gap ahead of him.
No.
So he decided to sit in second place. But I think even if he tried to chase Nico Rosberg this weekend, don't think he would have done it. I think Nico had the edge on him all weekend.
No, I mean, looking at some of the other penalties that were dished out. I wish we could talk about more on track action than what happens in the stewards' room. But,
yeah, it's the way it is at the moment.
Yeah, Ericsson jumped the start. Not seen that for a couple of years. Anyone do that?
Was it Sergio Perez or somebody jumped the start? Was it last year at a race? Was it Maldonado possibly jumped the start by miles?
Oh yes, he actually made up a whole position before the lights went out.
Yeah, he did. One of the races last year, Charlie Whiting set the lights, and there was a footage of him in the.
Shaking his head or something.
Shook his head and pointed at Maldonado's car. He saw it before he didn't even have to refer to it. To things. So yeah, Maldonado, I think, was the last person to jump a start so significantly. But yeah, I mean, you're going to incur a penalty for a jump start. Was it Carlos Sainz got a penalty for speeding in the pit lane?
Yeah.
Which is, I don't mean, you know, there are so many things in place to stop drivers from speeding in the pit lane that, you know, it shouldn't happen. It's it's a driver error.
Yeah,
as most of them are.
Hit the limiter too late, and
But
it's a case now, isn't it? Just coming in too hot, isn't it? Usually,
yeah.
Things going over the time beacon a little bit. Even if it's what is 80 kilometres an hour.
I think it depends on the circuit.
Does it? I mean, if you just happen to be 81 or 82, you're getting a penalty, aren't you?
Yeah. Or 80.1.
Yeah. So they never actually tell you how much over. They are.
I think it's anything over, given the way that certain Grand Prix teams will push the limits of any rules.
Yeah.
It makes
all
sense.
All Grand Prix teams will push the limits of the rules.
Well, that's it. Yeah. When you're dealing the sport, which deals in hundredths and tenths of a second, you know, it all matters, doesn't it?
So there's no, oh, it was only 0.1 of a mile an hour over.
Yeah, but in the same respect, they can't afford to start laying off too early going in. You know,
they've
got to be on the limit going into the pit lane.
True. Anyway, we did actually have a race on Sunday, and I suppose we should sort of talk about what happened on track rather than what everyone got wrong. I mean, aside from obviously the Mercedes flying away with it, we get Massa back on the podium.
Fantastic to see.
Great to see.
Well done, Ferrari.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, well done, Ferrari.
Well done, Ferrari, for
actually helping Massa out for the first time in their history.
Yeah.
And of course, that's going back to talking about what people have done wrong.
And of course, it was Austria where Massa should have won and got told to let Schumi pass him at the last corner.
It was Barrichello, wasn't it?
Was it Barrichello? Yes, it was Barrichello. Yes, it was. Sorry, I'm full of flu. I'm not thinking straight. But yeah, Ferrari have manipulated the podium at Austria before, and they inadvertently did again by cocking up Seb's stop again.
But Williams were right up there.
They were up there, were ready for when a mistake was made, and they took advantage, which is part of what you have to do.
Yeah,
and they were spot on. So kudos to Williams for managing to take a podium. And was it Massa's 40th podium of his career?
Something like a nice
milestone to reach.
Force India.
Yeah.
Did pretty well.
They haven't done too bad at all. I think Hulk is definitely on a roll.
Yeah,
I'd say so.
He must be feeling great after the Le Mans win, if a little sort of lacking in sleep. Drove an absolutely faultless race. Perez had a great race as well. Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have got performance from absolutely nowhere as well.
I was looking at the car, and the front end, it looks like they made some modifications on it, and I think they've actually got some kind of new aero package on there.
I wonder if this is the lead up to their B-spec car, because that's
next race, Silverstone.
So if they were trying out new parts on the current spec car, which is like, which is mostly last year's.
Yeah,
it works.
Oh yeah. I wonder if it was just a case of, well, we've got a whole new car coming to Silverstone, but we can bolt the front wing onto the old car.
Yeah, it could well be. But
well,
but
they did well in Canada. They did well in Austria, and those two are quite similar circuits. I wonder if it's just that the circuits suit that car particularly well.
And the way they set up the car, and sort of the, so every car is different. It could have been, you know, the distribution of downforce and weight, etc. So many different areas.
They tend to go well in the soft tyres as well, don't they? Softs and super softs.
That's what I mean. So many different areas of science that come into it.
It's a fast circuit. They've got Mercedes engines, so it's gonna.
So they are gonna be better. And I think Silverstone will suit them quite well.
Do you think? The Le Mans win and putting a good performance in this weekend. Do you think it's going to do anything for Hülkenberg's stock?
I don't know. I don't know if he can move up anywhere from Force India. You know, there was talk of him getting McLaren drive when Hamilton left.
Ferrari was talked.
He didn't, and you know, he's been on Ferrari's radar for a long time. I think Ferrari have now got other drivers on their radar.
I think Ferrari are mainly looking at Bottas, but that could leave a space in Williams. He could actually end up going back there.
It could end up going back to Williams. Yeah, I mean, it's possibility. But you know, you've got to be careful when you make these moves in Formula One.
Have you been speaking to Alonso?
Yeah, I have.
Well, he's had a lot of time to talk.
Yeah. I think there's
not a lot of time to do anything else.
No,
there's a case to be made that if he can get anything at all up, like further up the grid, it's going to be better for his future than being in Force India. Now, regardless, they'll put a couple of good races in here. You know, like you say, maybe the car suits it. Maybe everything just swings their way. But in general, Force India have been on a downturn, haven't they, for a while now?
I think it's always been the case. I mean, look at what happened with Fisichella, because he started, he did that magnificent performance at Belgium, which was the first time Force India had got anywhere near the front of the grid and got points.
Yeah.
Then Ferrari said, "Oh, do you want to come and finish the season for us?" And he was there like a shot.
Yeah, he was, because
I was at that race.
You were there, were you? Belgium. I think that still is, to this date, Force India's best finish in a Grand Prix, under the guise of Force India, of course.
Yeah.
The only reason they didn't get a win was because the Ferrari had Kurs, wasn't it?
Was that what it was?
That was the only thing that kept Kimi ahead, was Kurs. That he just used it to defend.
I only found out 3 weeks later that Force India didn't have Kurs when I bought the PlayStation game that season, and I was driving the Force India and wondering where the Kurs button was. Why it wasn't lighting up on the steering wheel?
Because they didn't have it.
Because they didn't have it.
No.
Trivia.
Speaking of Formula 1 video games, no career mode in the new Formula 1 game.
Isn't there?
No career mode where you can put your own name in. I know it's not that, but it's still Formula 1. I'm sure there's people who listen to this podcast.
Well, you'll be all right.
You'll be all right, Stevens.
My name's not Will. And that means I've got to stay in the manor.
Oh, I don't know.
The pubs on the Isle of Man are available. Oh, local bad joke. Yeah. It's the medication.
Yeah. Blame the medication.
Crack.
There were positive things to take from Austria as well as Force India. It wasn't just Force India's performance. Lotus with their Mercedes engine as well made full advantage of it. We saw Lotus easily overtaking Renault powered cars.
Yep. And a cracking save by Maldonado.
Because
right. I understand all those words, just not in that order.
Oh.
Imagine all the times that he's crashed.
Yeah.
Imagine one of them he didn't crash spectacularly.
That was this.
I saw it, but I still don't believe it happened. Yeah. I just thought I was hallucinating on Lemsen.
I have a feeling that he's been told, you need to start bringing this car home. Because the last couple of races,
he bailed out of one as well, didn't he, during that race?
Yeah.
I can't remember who it was against, but he had half an idea of sticking his nose in there, but actually, at that point.
I think he's been told he's got no drive next year if he doesn't bring the car.
Well, I think one of those seats has got Julian Palmer's name on it. I think he's convinced of it.
Yeah, it's the one his dad's holding and running alongside him with.
You've got to let this go, man.
Julian, look, I've got your name embroidered on the seat already. You're going to be a superstar.
I like his voice.
That's how Jonathan Palmer talks.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I just have had a downer on Jonathan Palmer for years.
20 years.
Yeah.
If not more.
If not more.
Yeah. Sorry, I just realised my Jonathan Palmer impression is very close to my James Allen impression. Just
a quick note on for Julian Palmer's Lee watch. He was only a tenth slower than Maldonado in FP1 in this weekend.
Which, you know, for me, that means that they're, as you pointed out before, that they're priming him for an F1 seat.
But if you can be within a tenth of the race drivers, you know, when you're in pre practice and you haven't got half the time that they've got in the same car, you've also not really got a car that's set up for you. You've got your seat stuffed in somebody else's car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're doing well.
You're doing okay. Yeah, you're doing pretty well.
I think we'll see him in the car. It's just a question of which one of the two incumbent sponsorship bringers in they're going to get rid of. I think Grosjean's favourite to go at the minute.
I've got nothing to back this up either, but I'd imagine
it's never stopped you in the past.
Well, this is true. I'd imagine that the total sponsorship isn't worth as much as Maldonado's sponsorship because Maldonado's got a big checkbook.
I think Maldonado brings in $30 million.
Yeah.
To the team. I don't know how much Romain Grosjean brings in.
It's not going to be anywhere close to that because Maldonado's got the Venezuelan government behind.
Well, yeah, the Venezuelan government
paid $5 million each, I think, don't they?
Yeah, Jolly and Palmer probably do it for a packet of Monster Munch and a fruit yogurt.
I like Monster Munch. Yogurt's alright too.
So you're saying you drive for Lotus for a pack of Monster Munch and a
strawberry
yogurt.
Strawberry yogurt.
Yeah, man. And beef Monster Munch, the rest are rubbish.
Send all of your beef Monster Munch and strawberry yogurt related products into Three Legs, Four Wheels, Isle of Man.
If we're sending me Swiss Strange Foods, can I have all the orange wine gums as well?
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
That's your bonus for pole position.
But I buy like whole packs of wine gums. Just
you can have a Toblerone if you win the championship.
I don't like Toblerone.
Well, that's what you're going to get.
They're too dangerous to eat.
Only because they're triangular.
Yeah, but you can't bite them. It feels like it's going through the roof of your bloody mouth.
Are you enjoying our Formula One podcast about Formula One?
Back on track.
Kind of, yeah. We haven't finished talking about the races.
Oh, yes, we
because
can.
I want to quickly point out that Maldonado's brilliant save was a reverse of what happened in Monaco. It was Verstappen that slowed down.
Yes.
As you pointed it out to me before, Dan.
Yes, if you watch the footage, you've got... You've got Maldonado right up behind Verstappen going along the straight, and you just see the red light on the back of Verstappen's car come on.
So he's just lifted off.
Maldonado pulls over to the side, which is what causes the bit of a wobble.
Because he's under DRS as well.
Because he's got his DRS open at that point. Then Verstappen moves across, which you're allowed to do, but it's a bit of a move that's likely to end up with two cars hitting the barrier.
It's not nice, is it? You know, it points to his inexperience again, which, you know, I like Max Verstappen. He's done very well so far, but I mean, he still needs refining.
Yeah,
and that is the
I think he's a very good driver, but I think he thinks he's better than he actually is.
Yeah, and that's the same thing he accused Grosjean of doing before the accident in Monaco. So, you know, a little bit of Lotus karma, if you will, for Max Verstappen there. Who, let's be honest, didn't have a brilliant race this time out, did he, Max Verstappen?
Not really.
It was good, but not great.
The reason I think being for that was because when Toro Rosso looked at the sky on Saturday and saw it raining hard, they changed their wing settings. So they actually ran more downforce through qualifying and then subsequently the race on the off chance that the weather was going to stick around for the race, which is why they were so quick in the early part of qualifying, because they tweaked the wings just before they sent the cars out for qualifying. So
made him better in the corners, but unfortunately
not many corners
and long straights, which they were losing out on.
Could have been a great call if it had been raining.
Yeah,
but it wasn't.
Yeah,
it wasn't. No, it was.
That's the thing about strategy calls like that. If what's out of your control plays into your hands, you've made a masterstroke. If what you've called doesn't play into your hands, you've messed up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just the way that things are, I think.
Yeah. Anonymous Sauber were kind of anonymous.
They're kind of anonymous. Marcus Ericsson was completely anonymous. He was right at the back of the field, minus the one finishing manner of Roberto Meri. But
he got away quick at the start.
Oh yeah, he had a quick start.
Just a little bit too much. Yeah, he was it 5 second penalty he was given for that at his first pit stop. Well, his only pit stop, I think. Don't know if he made more than one. I have to check on that.
Don't think they actually showed anything much of him on TV apart from when he was getting passed.
Well, Felipe Nasr, though, on the other hand,
had a very good race.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was on the cusp of the points. I think he finished 11th or 12th in the end, but he battled, and you know, we saw old school wheel to wheel racing. Drivers, you know, quite often will back out of a move. They'll let somebody get past, thinking that, you know,
they can DRS them.
Thinking that they can DRS them on the straight, or I'll try and outbreak him into the next zone or whatever. You don't get wheel-to-wheel racing so much now. The way that Felipe Nasr raced in Austria, very, very old school, taking the outside line around, thinking, I know that this might be the slower way around the corner, but I'm going to stick here, might put this guy off, might make a mistake. He's going to have to change his line for the next corner. I can get him back, rather than just backing off as soon as the car, as soon as he thinks he's lost a position. I applaud Felipe Nasr for that. It was fantastic to see somebody, you know, doing their utmost to hold a position or to try and take a position. It was great. Ding,
ding. We all forgot to put our phones on airplane mode.
I didn't.
I did. Lee definitely did. Now, you mentioned the manor. Second race on the track, they only had one finisher.
Well, Will Stevens didn't get very far, did he? As soon as the safety car was out for the Kimi Fernando incident.
So was he.
Yeah, Will Stevens has pulled over at the side of the track.
Yeah.
And we never really heard why.
Oil pressure problem.
Was it? Sorry, yeah. I didn't hear that.
It just got mentioned sort of very briefly.
An oil pressure problem. Yeah. So they just pulled him over in an awkward position, which made the safety car stay out a little bit longer because he was, in a very awkward position where he pulled over and they had to recover the car.
I was surprised how quickly they got rid of the Ferrari and the McLaren, actually. When that first happened, I smelled a restart from that point.
Yeah. Well, if you watch the replay again, you'll see there is a crane actually not too far away from where they actually had the
incident. I think they were expecting something to happen there, just not quite as spectacular.
With the impact as well, and the fact that like Nando was up on the top two, they were lucky that the barrier wasn't damaged.
Yeah, quite right. Yeah,
and kudos to that marshal for jumping back out of the way, because if you watch the footage, you'll see a marshal just in the barrier gap, jump backwards as the whole thing's heading towards him.
You say kudos for moving out of the way. The other option he had sucked.
Yeah. True. I'm not good at words tonight. I'm not very good at brain.
No, Fernando Alonso. The soundbite that Alonso gave was great. He didn't really know much of what was happening. He had a seat position, which meant he was looking at the sky.
Yeah.
So he looked in his mirror and he saw Raikkonen underneath him. Something's gone a bit wrong here.
Shout out to both of those, though. I thought it was really good seeing like Nando just jump out of the car to check if Kimi was okay.
Yeah.
Help Kimi out of the car when he got out, and then they just walked off together. There was no shouting. Yeah.
They shook hands and then they walked off. Mature drivers, former teammates, of course.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, mature enough to say, you know, that wasn't your fault. You didn't intentionally, you know.
Obviously, a lot of respect there.
It's, you know, two former world champions who know how to deal with a racing incident. Mm-hmm. None of this getting the radio, oh, he's hit me, speak to the stewards, I can't have this.
Yeah, there'd been no point speaking to the stewards, because how do you assess a penalty on that? 90 minutes stop and stop.
Well, they did say they were going to investigate it after the race. Although, well,
they did.
Don't think
no further action warranted.
No,
it was a racing incident. It was it was unavoidable. There was a technical fault with Kimi's car. He got wheel spin. He couldn't be in full control. Bang.
Yeah. Felt bad for McLaren as well, though, because they came to Austria with some new parts which they wanted to test in a 2-day test that's coming up now. And they
leave with nothing.
Well, yeah, because they can't test the new parts because they were all bolted to Fernando's car for the race, and most of them are broken. So
a lot of the new parts got swept up.
Yeah, and Jensen, of course, as soon as the safety car decided to pull in and everybody went racing, Jensen's gearbox broke down, which means he incurs another penalty for the next race.
Unless he has to change the gearbox. If the gearbox was showing signs of going and they pulled him in as a precaution, then they shouldn't have to change it.
You can sneeze if you want to.
I'm on the verge of sneezing. I don't want to sneeze on Mike because
we can edit this stuff.
don't sneeze it, baby.
Is there? I don't know because it was such a big accident and there was so much force in it. I wonder if there's a room for concern in McLaren that their new nose had a part in Alonso getting launched.
I think the reason that he went up was actually wheel to wheel.
Yeah, which is he just got on the wheel and then that's climbed over. It was just a thought, you know, with them having a new.
You've seen the wheel covers, haven't you? Like the wheel arches, almost that they have in IndyCar.
Yeah,
I don't want that in Formula One. No, but that's that's part of the reason that they did that in IndyCar because of so many launches when wheels were touching.
Yeah, and IndyCars are sticking to the ground ace at the minute, aren't they?
The main problem with the IndyCar wheels and all the races that I've seen this season is you get at least one falling off every couple of laps and bouncing off somebody else's car
and bursting into flames.
I've not seen quite as much fire this season, unfortunately.
What do you mean, unfortunately? We don't want drivers to burn.
I'm sick.
Jacques, stand by.
Save us, Jacques. Right, get ready to hear Sean Connery. Get ready to hear some Jack Villeneuve, because we're going to talk about Gerhard Berger now.
Oh, f***. Swear hard burger.
You said it, baby.
I did.
Yeah, lurking round Toro Rosso all weekend, on the pit wall, wearing team clothes. Drinking their champagne before the podium interview. I wondered why there was only two bottles on there.
Felipe Massa doesn't drink.
Oh, that'll be it. He didn't get a chance.
No.
And then on the grid walk with Jean Elsie, if you're watching the Sky coverage.
Yeah.
Saying that everything was in place to buy Toro Rosso apart from the money. How serious do you think he was with that?
Well, he used to manage a team, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was a manager. He was like a... I don't think he was a director or at any part sort of executive owner.
I think Matashin's put him in as team principal.
Yeah, but he was team principal for a while. I believe he was team principal when Vettel drove for Toro Rosso.
Could well be.
Yeah, and, for whatever reason, he left. But he appeared to, on the grid walk... It's difficult to tell with Berger whether or not he was joking and how much of what he said was a joke, but it looked as though when he said that we have everything in place to buy Toro Rosso, all that's missing is the money, he seemed to pull Jean Alesi very close to him at the same time, as if to say, we are very close to buying Toro Rosso, we've got everything except the money.
Unless the money could be coming from
Jean Alesi.
From Jean Alesi, if he does another shampoo advert.
Possibly.
I don't think it'll be that. I think it'll be Audi. I'm sure it's going to be Audi this.
I'll come to that in a bit, because I got a bit of a theory about this one. But yeah.
But Berger's been showing up quite a lot lately.
He also did the pre-race Legends laps as well. I think he was in a Ferrari. Niki Lauda did it as well in a McLaren.
Berger probably did better in that Ferrari than he did when he was driving for them.
Probably did, yeah. I mean, he was also, don't forget, he was teammates with Jean Alesi at Ferrari.
And Benetton.
And then they moved to Benetton, didn't they, later on? So, you know, it was as much as I was hoping for Arnold Schwarzenegger to be on the podium again in Austria, it wasn't to be. We had Gerhard Berger. But no, he did well, despite the fact he swore and probably wasn't as coherent as he should have been.
That's a good one.
I don't think Arnold Schwarzenegger even remembers what Austria is.
Maybe not.
I'm not sure Gerhard Berger remembered what Austria was.
He remembered what champagne was.
He remembered what something was, put it that way.
He just woke up in the morning with a massive hangover and Kimmy stood over him going, I want to be in your team.
Oh dear God, Gerhard Berger is team principal and Kimmy Räikkönen is driver.
Would be awesome.
What a party they would have for just finishing a race.
Instantly, Force India lose the Smirnoff sponsorship.
yeah, Smirnoff suddenly have a Formula One team.
Yeah, it wouldn't be Smirnoff, it'd be Finlandia.
Finlandia, of course it would, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, 10 days after the last race, when testing starts for the next one, or free practice starts for the next one evening, you'd still have to breath test the drivers just to make sure.
Yeah, you
why
would.
Don't Jägermeister sponsor Red Bull?
Because that would create Jaeger bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, when Red Bull,
you never see the end if you start with Jaeger.
When
bombs.
Red Bull started, they apparently turned down sponsorship offers from three or four vodka brands because they didn't want to be associated with that side of Red Bull.
Oh, because Red Bull can kill people well enough on its own without mixing alcohol with it.
Yeah, I think this is
Jack.
This is extreme Red Bull. Not
extreme to the max.
Extreme to the max. To the max. Red Bull,
right.
As in waking up going, "Where are my trousers?"
In a field in Essex.
Yeah. When you started
with my legs in.
Yeah. When you started in Aberdeen.
Is that something that happens strange for other people? Is it?
No, it's normal
face.
To get a hard burger.
So you have a theory.
You have a theory.
I do.
He's been teasing us with this theory
because
for the last two and a bit hours.
Yeah, because moving on from Toro Rosso and Gerhard Berger, not to make this about their engine supplier, but Red Bull have had it confirmed that they were offered Ferrari engines, and that was it Arriva Bene? Was it who said that they've been offered
Sergio something?
Or was it Sergio Marconi? Was it?
Yeah, it was Marconi.
Yeah, who? Sorry, I wasn't quite sure who it was. Who said that he had spoken to Red Bull and had informally offered them an engine contract when
want to buy an engine?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, with his big long coat on on the inside of his pocket.
Want to buy an engine, mate? Want to buy an engine? £5.
Well, careful owner.
Yeah, we're very careful owner.
And Kimmy.
Yeah, and Kimmy Wagner. Yeah, so Red Bull have had an informal offer made by Ferrari to supply them engines from 2017. Now, Mateschitz has played it down, saying, "No, we're not interested in being a Ferrari customer team." Christian Horner backed him up straight away, but Dr. Helmut Marko, them in between the two of them, decided to say, "Well, you never know, that could happen." And this got me thinking again about...
He's keeping an eye on it.
Yeah. Jack, help. He's keeping an eye on the situation. Oh, dear. But the... Yeah, this got me thinking about what we've been discussing the last few podcasts about Volkswagen, Audi, somebody from this group, maybe under a Lamborghini badged engine, possibly.
Porsche?
Or Porsche, yeah. Possibly coming into Formula One to supply Red Bull with engines. Now, I think when... This is the beginning of it. I think before this year, Audi were probably quite up for a... You know, coming into Formula One, they've got Domenicali already, who knows in Formula One how Formula One works. They've got various other high up motorsport people in their division who don't actually have specific job titles, especially Domenicali, Stephen Sunday. He's got no actual job title. So I think they were angling for something to do in Formula One, but I think they've changed their minds. And here's the reason why I think they've changed their minds. They're not stupid, and they've looked at how a four-time champion like Renault has struggled with the new rules of Formula One, and they've looked at how Honda have come in 1 year late,
mm-hmm.
and gone, "Good God, Honda are not terrible at making, you know, fast competitive engines, and this has not worked." Do they want to come in 2-3 years late, even with a revised formula in 2017, when everybody's already had the jump on the hybrid engines, and be embarrassed by having Red Bull even further back than they are now with a new engine or a new power unit that's not up to scratch on the cars and
see,
the engines?
Presumably they can pour all the money they want into developing an engine until the second they confirm they're going to be a Formula One supplier.
They can pour as much money into it as they want until the first test, I think.
Yeah, they can do as much as they want.
Yeah, I think they're sort of locked in there as soon as the car hits the track, I think. But I think that's what happened with Honda.
Yeah, but is what I'm saying is they're probably taking a step back until the next serious rule change in Formula One, which would be probably already too late to start developing things for 2017. They're probably already too late to do that.
So we're looking at 2020.
We're looking at 2020 because Honda are already so far behind. They came in 1 year late. They confirmed, was it 2013, 2014, they were going to be in 2015?
Because they confirmed in 2013, at the end of 2013, they started developing their engine in either 2011 or 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as far as we know, Audi started building their engine in 2012 with the eye on into Formula 1.
They may well have done.
If they're coming into Formula 1, I don't believe they haven't just decided this year.
But the whole previous boss of Audi refusing to be in Formula 1 while Ecclestone was in charge, which correct. Had that stopped him even looking at doing something 5 years down the line? Are they now looking at doing something in 5 years' time?
I think that's more likely, and I think we will see Audi in Formula 1 at some point, but I think they've looked at what's happened, because if you remember, we spoke back in episodes 1 and 2 of the podcast about BMW keeping an eye on what was happening with Honda, and rumours that Ford as well were keeping an eye on what was happening with Honda with a view to possibly coming in and taking advantage of the great marketing power of the hybrid engines in Formula 1. Honda are trying to use it as a marketing tool, but it really isn't working. Their television advert is terrible and doesn't work because McLaren and Honda are so far down the grid and are having weekends like they've just had in Austria.
Do you think it matters?
I think it's scared manufacturers away, and I think this could actually end up being a bigger problem, because unless you've got a Mercedes or a Ferrari engine already in your car, or you can have one next year, you've got no hope of doing anything until 2017, at least.
As far as every manufacturer that comes into Formula 1 wants to do well, yeah?
Absolutely.
What we call it for... for viewers around the world, Formula 1. I mean, what are the viewing figures like? Something like six million a race or something like that at the minute? It's
a bit more than that.
They took a massive tumble, didn't they? Well, so that might be British viewers.
British viewers.
Because it took a massive tumble, didn't it, when Sky took it? So, if we throw a guess out there and say, 50 million people around the globe watch Formula 1, maybe? Or will it be less than that?
I think it's probably more.
It'll be more than that.
But the only people that care about Honda being shit in Formula 1 is Formula 1 fans. The general public don't care. Do you know what I mean? So it's not damaging Honda's reputation outside of Formula 1.
Except that they can't run adverts that say...
No, they can't.
We make the engines that go in this car.
They can't maximise maximise their investment, but it's not harming the brand, for instance.
No, but it's not helping in the way that they thought it would, much as we've alluded to in the past with the Renault Williams Clio, for example.
Formula 1 is a gigantic money hole.
But they will just... they'll be thinking... that's obviously got to be in the future plans. Otherwise, they'll Toyota it. You know, if they just keep going at it, Toyota's brand never lost anything from being a rubbish Formula One team.
No, but that's a perfect example of a company, motor company, who just threw millions and billions of pounds at their Formula One development and got very little in return.
Yeah,
that was in the days when the Formula was a little bit more open with. The rules, the strict engine rules that are in place now, and looking at...
Which, ironically, with the hybrid engines, Toyota like to say they're the champions of with the Prius.
Yeah, which, you know, let's just not talk about that, because that's an entirely different kettle of fish. But,
ecological fish.
Yeah, but, I mean, Honda are brilliant in hybrid road engines.
Mm.
It comes to Formula One, and they can't... They can't even get anywhere near.
Let's not talk like Honda are never going to get it together.
Oh, no, they will. Yeah, of course they will. But this season has been very embarrassing for Honda so far.
Yeah, and it's only been embarrassing for Honda in amongst Formula One.
Yeah, but if you're Red Bull and you're currently powered by Renault and you're talking to Audi and Audi are like, well, we don't actually know for definite if we can keep up the development with what's going on at the moment. You actually may find it. Audi won't say this, but Red Bull and Audi could be talking together and saying, we might find ourselves further down the grid with an engine that's 2 years behind development.
Mm-hmm.
or even 3 years behind by the time 2017 rolls around. Yes, it's new rules and slightly new formula, but Ferrari, Mercedes and Renault will already have the development from this formula to look back on, and I think it could... They think it could... I think it scared them. I do. I think it perhaps scared them off.
I think more than that.
Until at least 2020.
I think the engine tokens for 2017 will be scrapped, and I think the engine rules will be unfrozen, and I think that'll invite them in.
It's going to need something like that.
If it wasn't for all this stuff that was going on with what you can do and what you can't do and the penalties for changing things and stuff... whatever Honda are putting into fixing their engine now, they'd have put 10 times in by now to try and get this sorted out.
Yeah, I do wonder if the number of penalties that we're seeing being handed out is, rather than being a symptom of problems in the sport, is actually a symptom of the engine manufacturers trying to force a rule change.
That kind of thing's happened before, and it wouldn't surprise me.
No, it wouldn't. I think the other thing that could be as well, I mean, it's there for a cost-cutting measure, but when you've got the likes of McLaren sat at the back of the grid, and they know that they're going to be at the back of the grid anyway, no matter what happens, they might as well change the engines every bloody week now.
Yeah.
You know, they might as well, you know, if they're going to be right down there, they might as well think, oh, well, if we throw a new engine in every week, we can keep, trying things with them. And the very worst that's happened, we're going to have a drive-through every race.
Find the one that works and clone it for next year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's interesting we say about sort of the developments that are coming in 2017. Christian Horner came up with an idea today about binning off the strategy group and getting an independent observer in, and suggested Ross Brawn. And I, for one, think that is an absolutely brilliant idea.
I'm not sure about the whole binning off the strategy group.
Oh, no, he said the strategy group doesn't work because everyone's doing things in their own interests.
Can't run the asylum.
Yeah, I think an independent person like Ross Brawn on the group is a brilliant idea. I'm not sure ignoring the wishes of the teams and the rights holders would be the best thing to do.
No, but surely it should be a case of when the rules and regulations are drawn up, they should be then passed on and have at it. You know, there shouldn't be...
The strategy group can be there to discuss what should be implemented from an outsider's perspective. But, I mean, there's already splinters in the strategy group.
Of course there are.
There always will be.
Yeah.
And Mercedes want everything to stay exactly as it is at the moment, and everyone else
says, no, not a chance.
You've got the old teams association, which, you know, that always, there was always splinters and splits in that, and teams who refused to turn up to meetings because they felt like they weren't being listened to. Same in the Grand Prix Drivers Association. That's collapsed a couple of times in the past because some drivers felt that their needs or their voices weren't being listened to. And, you know, these things happen in Formula One, but it's just like Lee said, it's being run from the inside.
But look at Forta. You know, Forta was an absolute car crash of a situation.
Yeah, but if it's run from the inside by the people who are on the inside, then is it becoming stale? Does it need somebody independent? Or an independent... No, I don't want to say an independent body, because then you start getting loads of people whose opinion might not count as much as you know, other people... People within sport will say that their opinion doesn't count as much, whereas somebody like Ross Brawn is respected throughout the sport, and the only... You know, you have to get a very select few people in an independent body in order... to be respected right across Formula One.
The only thing I'd object with Ross Brawn is he too old for that position now?
No.
You know, because let's face it, I mean, let's hope it doesn't happen, because I really like Ross Brawn. How old is he now? 62?
20 years younger.
20 plus Bernie years younger Eccleston. Than Bernie Eccleston, who still micromanages everything.
Well, Bernie Eccleston's going to live fucking ever, isn't he? But you've... Would it not be better if Formula One is putting new proposals through to have a radically different rule set in 2017, would it not be better to have somebody in as a key advisor who can take the sport forward? I mean, realistically, what's Ross Brawn going to do? He might have a couple of years advising before he retires, or worse. Do you know what I mean?
If you look at Ross Brawn, was he 62, 63 years old now?
Mm-hmm.
As I already mentioned,
I realize 62, 63 isn't the oldest person in the world.
No, you're quite right. But I mean, you look at Bernie Eccleston, who we've already just mentioned, well into his 80s. We've spoke about in previous podcasts. Sepp Blatter in his 70s. Has been running football for however many years.
Mm-hmm.
Before him, in
running or ruining.
Ruining. Before him, you had João Havelange, who was a lifetime president of FIFA into his 90s. Mm. You get elder people with respect for mm-hmm. their previous work in sports, working right up until almost, I'm not saying Ross is near the end of his life at all, whatsoever, but working right up till close to the end of their lives. It's just something that happens, but I don't think 62 is too young for Ross to take up the position, even if he took it up for 10 years, transformed the sport for 10 years, and then there was another figurehead, Christian
Adrian
Horner.
Adrian
Newey, somebody like that in 10 years' time, who is able to take his place.
I mean, Adrian Newey would be ideal because he's always going to be owned by Red Bull now, isn't he?
He would have to leave working for Red Bull in order to
be an independent.
To have no conflict of interest.
Yeah.
But he's worked for teams all up and down the paddock, same mm-hmm. as Ross Brawn has. So mm-hmm. I think if he wasn't taking a paycheck from Red Bull, people, I don't feel people would think there was a conflict of interest there.
Oh, we get to see Adrian Newey's massively aerodynamic boat this weekend, don't we? That isn't a boat.
Hydrodynamic
flying fin thing.
When you can imagine vessel. He rips that up. It's.
Is it Red Bull sponsored?
Yes.
But if he comes out and builds a freaking amazing boat as well now,
which I think he's about to do.
Yeah, I think he's about to do as well.
Is Ben Ainsley part of that team as well?
Yeah. So Britain's most successful sailor, Britain's most successful aerodynamic designer.
Isn't Martin Whitmarsh overseeing that as well?
Oh, in that case, they're doomed.
Yeah,
Martin Whitmarsh.
It's either Martin Whitmarsh or Stefano Domenicali.
Well, Domenicali, Steve Sunday is now working for Audi, isn't he?
Oh, is he? Right,
Steve Sunday's working for.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Martin Whitmarsh then that's overseeing it.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
I like Martin Whitmarsh.
He was the fall guy in McLaren, let's be honest.
Yeah, it was a shame.
Yeah, I mean, now that he's gone, because Ron was taking his back seat, and we're seeing a lot more of Ron, and we're seeing a lot more angry Ron.
Well, there you go, Ron Dennis.
Yeah, but
another perfect example.
Ron Dennis is coming to save the team. Coming, throwing his weight around, the team's is in an even worse shape now. Now, it's the French fella's fault.
Yeah, but Ron Dennis is another great example. He decided to take a back seat in his early 60s, and then he's now, 67, 68?
Yeah, he got bored and came back to work.
Yeah, now he's trying to gain complete shareholder, a majority shareholder stake in McLaren again.
Yeah, but is it a good move for McLaren as a team?
Possibly, possibly not.
Well, they were most successful under him when he had complete control.
Well, yeah, this is true. But, I don't know, times change, and I don't know. I think he's going to be one of those people that's very set in his ways. And if his way doesn't happen to work, I don't think he's going to change his mind to make it work.
Well, no, he won't change his mind. He'll just change how it's done to make it work, and it'll change the people that'll make it work, and he will be right at some point or another. That's the way that Ron Dennis works. Mm-hmm. It's been successful.
Yeah.
But going back to what we were talking about, I think, the strategy group, members of it are slagging it off, saying that it's not working.
A member that was in a winning car a couple of years ago,
yes.
And isn't now.
Yeah, I mean, Toto doesn't seem to have too many bad things to say.
Yeah, he thinks everything should say is it is. 2017, why are we changing the rules? Everything's amazing.
It's another politics inside sport.
Yeah.
Which
is very much an argument for an independent chair of the group.
Yeah. Yeah, get it. you know, to get it back on track, you actually need somebody without a vested interest to put their own point forward, and it's not make it a case of who's got the loudest voice. Which we all know is going to be Toto anyway, because he shouts.
I suppose this is the problem, isn't it? Because with Formula One being such a technical sport, you know, you're not talking about needing a group of businessmen to run the sport. You essentially need a group of scientists, you know, that are going to sit there and put together proposals for new rules. And unfortunately, to be that good in the field you need to be, to have the, you know, the input that you can put into it, you're probably already working in Formula One.
Or recently retired from it.
Yeah.
Back to on-track matters. We have had a race, so that meant there was a Pasta disaster predictor. And, well, for the second time on the trot, he scored points.
Is that the first time in his career, did you say before?
It's either first or second, I think it's first.
First time in his career he's scored points two races in a row. He's been racing since 2010? 2011?
About that. So, Lee, you have the results. Let's see how wrong we all were.
In no particular order, Chris Flood, lap 2, turn 3, wrong.
Incorrect.
Very incorrect.
Me, lap 1, turn 2, wrong.
Incorrect. Oh, you went from one turn later then.
Yeah. I thought that hairpin there, I could just see him running wide onto somebody.
Or into somebody.
Yeah. So I was wrong.
It's Alonso's job to get onto somebody.
Dan, lap 25, turn 2. You were wrong. Paul.
Very precise, Dan.
Lap 23, turn 4. Wrong.
So I was closest then.
Sean, which is Paul's girlfriend, lap 15, turn 2.
So I was closest then.
So Dan kind of wins by default.
It's not as much fun. He tried.
Because
he
I was only 50 laps out.
You were only 50 laps out, yeah.
And we did try and predict how many laps behind the McLarens were, and I think I said Jensen would last longer than Fernando, so I'm claiming a win on that one.
We did also state that Mano would be approximately 4 or 5 laps down.
It was between 5 and 6, actually, and it was 3. We were well off on that one.
3, so yeah.
So I did put this in the live blog, so Mano have improved.
Yeah. They have improved. And I
good
think
work, Mano.
Marcus Ericsson was only one lap ahead of them.
Yeah. So, we'd still like to see the name on the car. Because you've got the space now, TFI Friday's been and gone, so you can put us on the rear wing.
In fact, hey, Manor, listen, we want 3legs4wheels.com on the side of your car. Just do it, yeah.
How many laps did you say the Manor was down by the end of it?
Three. And Marcus Ericsson was 2 laps down.
That's pretty good going considering the track as well, because it's a short track, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, 7 laps behind the safety car.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So really, it was a 64-lap race.
Yeah, but still, you know, it's
for a minute.
Where is it? 1 minute.
1 minute.
9. 1 minute 8. 1 minute 9.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Fast, but super fast laps. Yeah.
So I mean, you're 30 seconds shorter than a normal track, aren't you? Really?
Well, yeah. But I mean, that's an improvement for Manor, and hopefully, when they come with their. Apparently, they are still doing
upgrades. McLaren will sort that when they stick Honda engine in the back of it.
Yeah. They're still doing upgrades, apparently, Manor, for Belgium, but it's not quite going to be the car that they've now binned off.
Shifting the blue tack around.
Yeah, making sure that the duct tape's in the right place.
Well, that's what held Grosjean's Lotus together, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Like the idea they've got an upgrade, they've gone from parcel tape to duct tape.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be tank tape next, you watch. They've gone from the Pasta disaster predictor on to Captain Obvious Award.
The return of Captain Obvious. Thank you, F1, for saying obvious things.
Yes.
We have missed this for the last few weeks because everybody's been sensible.
In my personal opinion, this is the best crop of
This is the
Captain
strongest group of obvious comments we've had, I think.
Yeah,
so
and
far.
Spoiler alert, I don't think there's an Eric Boulier in this one, is there?
There is no Eric Boulier in this week's Captain Obvious Award.
I think you should get used to that.
What, there is no Eric Boulier?
Yeah.
Oh, just the fact that there'll be no Eric
just
Boulier
Formula
soon.
One.
Right.
He'll be having lunch.
Nomination number one. Williams, I think he's chief of strategy, isn't he now? Strategy engineer. Rob Smedley. We have to go forwards.
That is the way the aerodynamics on the car are set up.
Yes.
And generally the way that things...
Maldonado doesn't drive for them anymore.
No, and I don't think, you know, even if you're talking in the non-literal sense, if you're talking about the you know,
progressing through the season sense.
Well, yeah, everybody has to move forwards. Yes. Nobody wants to go backwards.
Speaking of moving forwards.
Speaking of moving forwards, nomination number two. David Croft, approximately 8 laps into the race. Is that a slow McLaren?
Well, I've just checked my calendar and it's still 2015.
So, yes, David Croft, there is a slow McLaren.
I've just checked my calendar for the lap timings.
Yeah. You just got to that one before me.
Oh, just. Yeah, I've just had it in. Actually, Kevin Magnussen is still going around Melbourne.
Faster than Max Chilton, though.
Well, yeah, everybody's faster than Max Chilton. Jules Bianchi's currently faster than Max Chilton.
Oh!
He is. Come on. Sorry, Jack.
And it was at that moment Lee fell in love with Chris Flood.
I had a special cup. Guys, you don't know what the special cup is. It's fine. It's an in-joke. You'll get it one day. You won't get it.
When we do the video blog.
Yeah, video blog.
Let's not do a video blog.
No.
Let's never do that. That's uneditable. Uneditable. Nomination number three. Max Verstappen. If it wasn't for my father, I wouldn't be sitting here today. Well.
Yeah.
I think all humans on the planet have to say if it wasn't for their fathers, they wouldn't be where they are today. So that's incredibly obvious from Max Verstappen there. And a fourth nomination, I think this is the most nominations we've had in any Captain Obvious Award.
It is.
Kimi Raikkonen, when asked what was going through his mind during the accident with Fernando Alonso, he said, "This is not ideal."
The man is an absolute legend.
Well, if he'd had his wits about him, he would have said Alonso's front wing.
So, we've got four nominations. Rob Smedley, Sky's David Croft, Max Verstappen and Kimi Raikkonen. We've actually got two drivers in there, which is rare to get drivers in there. Two drivers, an engineer and a commentator, yes.
I think that's Kimi's second appearance, though, isn't it?
I think he has appeared before, yes.
For saying that wasn't very nice.
That wasn't very nice. In Monaco, yeah, when Ricardo decided that... You see what he did there? That was not very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's have...
Kimi.
Go for Kimi.
Kimi.
It's an all-round Kimi Raikkonen.
Kimi Raikkonen, you are this week's Captain Obvious. Right, we will be back next week with the preview of Silverstone. We're going to leave recording a little late, so we've got all the last up-to-the-minute news. Dan may be shouting a little loud next podcast because he's off to see a Formula E race, and of course we know the levels of noise that come out there.
Yes, we do.
I will be shouting a little loud because I'm off to see AC/DC, and hopefully by this time next week I'll still be deaf. So we will we'll be back next week. But before we go, we just want to say that our thoughts are with the families of the people who tragically lost their lives in the incident in Graz at the weekend when the car went into the F1 celebration. It's obviously an awful time for those people, and I'm sure ourselves, along with the rest of the Formula One community, say that we're all deeply saddened. We are all thinking of you.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that's probably it from us for the week.
It is.
So we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.